I encourage you to open your Bibles to the 13th chapter of the book of Matthew as we continue our study of the parables. This will probably be the last of the studies of parables. I think we've covered most all of them, unless I go back and discover one we've missed somewhere. This is most of the parables that we've covered in our series on the parables. We'll talk tonight about the parable of the wheat and the tares, found in Matthew chapter 13. It is one of those parables that not only is spoken, but Jesus gives an explanation of that. And the parable is given in verses 24 to 30. And beginning at verse 36, we have the explanation of that parable. And so let's begin reading at verse 24. Matthew chapter 13, beginning at verse 24. Here's the parable. Another parable he put forth to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. And while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. And so the servants of the owner came to him and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' And he said to them, 'An enemy has done this.' The servant said to him, 'Do you want us to go and gather them up?' But he said, 'No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let them grow together until the harvest, and at the time of the harvest I will say to the reapers, first tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Now let's drop down to verse 36, where Jesus begins to explain. "And Jesus sent the multitude away and went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, 'Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field.' And he answered and said to them, 'He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so will it be in the end of this age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and he will gather out of his kingdom all of those that offend and those who practice lawlessness, and he will cast them in the furnace of fire with gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of the Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." William Hendrickson said concerning this parable, he said, "This parable, the parable of the sower and the one of the tares and the wheat, were probably explained to the disciples in close succession, based on Luke 9 in comparison with Matthew 13. It is not unlikely that they were also spoken in similar chronological sequence, the contents of verses 1 through 9 being immediately followed by that of verses 24 to 30. To an extent, they were similar in nature. Both introduce a sower, a field, a seed, and a crop yield. It is similar in some sense to the parable of the sower, though they are distinct. In its parable, there is a parallel with the dragnet that we'll talk about just a little bit later. But what's the point of this parable? Here is the parable that we'll go back through, and we'll look at the explanation that Jesus gives of that. But cutting to the chase of what is this parable about, what is the point of the parable? The point of the parable is there will be a separation of the righteous from the wicked. And represented by the wheat and the tares, the wheat being the good and the tares being the wicked, there's a separation of the righteous and the wicked, and that separation will be made at the end of the world. But here's the question that comes concerning the parable. Is this parable talking about and focusing on the righteous and the wicked being together in the world, and they are to continue together in the world, and then God will separate them in the end of time? Some think that that's the only application of that. Others think that it's talking about those in the church. That is, you have righteous in the church, and you have some hypocrites in the church, and they are to stay together and continue together and not try to separate those, and God will take care of that and settle a score in the end of time. We'll look a little bit later that passage is used to argue that there is no such thing as church discipline, and we ought not to practice church discipline because we're to let the wheat and the tares grow together till the end of time and let God, let the reapers take care of that. There's another alternative in explaining the text or applying the text, and that is that it's talking about the world and not church, but it would include those who are hypocrites because they're actually in the world too. And the point of that is that he's talking about the righteous and the wicked are going to continue together in the world. We can't separate the righteous from the wicked in the world, though we may can in the church. But that would include hypocrisy in the church, that they are, we may live with hypocrites around, and yet at the same time, God will take care of that in the end of time. We'll get to that application a little bit later, but here's the point. While that continues on, Satan is going to hinder the work of the Lord, but God will see that the score is settled in the end. And that's the point of the parable. God's going to take care of that in the end of time. Now let's raise a question here about what is a tare. I won't read the entire quotation. This is from Fawcett Bible Dictionary. That a tare is not our vetch, he says, but the darnel. That at first it's impossible to distinguish it from wheat or from barley until the wheat's ear is developed. When the thin, fruitless ear of the darnel is detected, its roots are so intertwined with that of the wheat that the farmer cannot separate it without plucking out both. And so it was a seed that would be sown, and as it begins to grow, you can't really see much until it gets big enough. I mean, you can't see much distinction until it's big enough that you begin to see, now we have a distinction, but it's too late. The roots are so intertwined that if you start pulling up one, you're going to pull up the good as well. So you can't take out the tares without taking out the wheat. Well, it goes on further. Here is the problem with that. The problem with the tare would be the fact that the seed is like the wheat, but it's smaller and black. But when mixed with flour, wheat flour, it causes dizziness, intoxication, and paralysis. And so it was a danger that you didn't want that with your wheat, but you separate those at the time of the harvest, and that was the point Jesus was making. Let's go back to verses 24 to verse 30, and let's run back through the parable. What is the point of the parable, or what is actually the wording of the parable, and what's stated in the parable? Well, let's go back to verse 24 and 25 and start with the sowing. Beginning at verse 24, as he spoke the parable, the first thing I want us to notice is there was the sowing of the good seed. So he put forth this parable to them, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. We'll talk about what that seed was a little bit later. But here's the sowing of the good seed. He sows that in his field. Everything is fine thus far. But verse 25 said that while men slept, the enemy came and sowed tares. There's both the sowing of the good and there's the sowing of the evil. So there's the sowing of the tares as well. But now there's the growing in addition to the sowing. There was the sowing of the good wheat. There's the sowing of the tares. Beginning at verse 26, there is the growing. At verse 26, the text tells us here is the growth that takes place. That when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. A little delayed, but they appear as well. Verse 27 tells us of the surprise. That is, as the growing, they see the growth. Now there's a surprise that the servants come to the owner of the field and said, "Sir, did you not sow good feed? Then why do we have tares?" And so they have a surprise. There is a proposal that they make. Look at verse 28. They said, they asked, "What about these tares? We said an enemy has done this." The proposal they made was, "Do you want us to go and gather them up? Since you only want good seed in your field, do you want us to go and gather up all the tares?" And so they made a proposal. But there was the restraint given in verses 29 to 30. His answer to that was, "No, we don't want to do that." Now why? That would be destructive. Let's go back to verse 29. "Lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them." We talked about Robertson observing that the roots would so intertwine, you can't pull one out without taking out the other. So he said that would be a rash decision. That would be destructive to the good to remove all of the tares from the field. We can't do that. So the answer to that is no. "Unless when they grow," he said, "let them both grow together at the time of the harvest. Then I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and put them in bundles and burn them and then gather my wheat into my barn." So what I learned from that is that they were presumptuous. They were servants. They were not the reapers. They were being presumptive. "You want us to go and gather them up?" He said, "No, I'll leave that for the reapers. We'll take care of that at the end of the harvest." This was premature because the wheat was not ready. You'll pull the wheat up, so wait till the time of the harvest when things are mature and they're ripe and they're ready, and then I'll gather my wheat and I'll separate the tares from the wheat and we'll take care of that at the time of the harvest. Now let's talk about the reaping at verse 30 and part B of verse 30. And that is, he said, "I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in bundles and burn them, then gather the wheat into my barn." There's going to be a time when there would be reapers, he said. The time of reaping will be at the time of the harvest. But when that takes place, that's when there will be a separation of the wheat and the tares. Now that's the parable as it was stated in verses 24 to 25. There was sowing of good seed, there was sowing of the tares. There was the growth of them both. There was this proposal that was made, and now there is the reaping that's found with reference to verse 30, and that is the separation will take place at the time of the harvest. Now, what does all of that mean? Let's look at the explanation beginning at verse 36. The disciples must have been puzzled by that. And so they wanted to know, what does all of this mean? So let's notice the application that's made of that beginning at verse 36. Beginning at verse 36, when they came into the house, they said, explain to us the parable of the tares of the field. Tell us, Lord, what all of that means. So he says at verse 36, he said, here are the parallels that are to be found. First of all, at verse 37, he answered and said, he who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The sower is the Son of Man. That's the Lord. That's Christ, the Messiah. That he's going forth and he's sowing the seed. Secondly, he said, the field is the world. You might underline world. We'll talk about the significance of why you need to underline that a little bit later. That's the realm where the gospel is sown. And so the field is the world where the gospel goes forth, and it's going forth out into the world. The gospel goes among all creation. And so as the gospel is going out into the world, it's going to be sown and produce good seed, good fruit. Now he said, the good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, meaning that's what's produced by the good seed. Not that the seed is actually the sons, that you're planting the sons, but he said, what his point is that the good seed, the gospel that's being sown, the truth that's being sown, produces the sons of the kingdom. So here is what is produced by the good seed. So the good seed is referred to as the sons of the kingdom. Now at verse 38, he said, the tares, what does that represent? Look at verse 38. The tares are those who are the sons of the wicked one. That's what is produced by the evil seed. So anything that's not the good seed, the truth of the gospel, which is error or anything contrary to the gospel or perversion of the gospel, produces the sons of the wicked one. But furthermore, at verse 39, he said, the enemy is the devil. That's who sows the tares. And then at verse 39, he said, the harvest is the end of time. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers, he said, are the angels. Then he said, here's your explanation of that. Here's the parallel. Now, he's not through. Here's the parallels. That a parable has parallels because a parable means to literally lay beside. And so let's lay beside the story of a man who had a sower who went into the field, sowed good seed, and someone sowed tares. The enemy did that, and there was a harvest, and then there were reapers who separated all that. That's talking about the Son of Man preaching the gospel in the world. The good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The tares are the sons of the wicked one, and the enemy is Satan. The end of time is the harvest, and that's when there will be the separation of the righteous from the wicked. But Jesus goes further. Here's the application of that. Having drawn the parallels, said, here's what I meant by all of that. Here is that which is laying beside the principles I've laid down, beginning at verse 40 now. Here is the application of that. At verse 40, he said, therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so it will be in the end of this age. Now, verse 41, the Son of Man will send out his angels and will gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and those who practice lawlessness. Now, his kingdom, I don't think here refers to the church. And we'll give evidence of that a little bit later. I think he's talking about his realm of the world wherein he is sowing the idea of the sowing of the gospel or sowing the seed of the kingdom. But the point is, in verse 41 and continuing in verse 42, and he will cast into the everlasting or into the furnace of fire, there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. The point in verse 41 and 42 is the tares are going to be separated at the end of time, not before. Now that includes, let's look at verse 41, those who practice lawlessness. That's where I said I think that would include those who are hypocrites in the church, that he would gather out of his kingdom all things that offend and those who practice lawlessness. That would include anyone who would be a hypocrite. So they're part of the world. They're going to separate those at the end of time. Now notice at verse 42, the end and the destruction of that is they're to be burned, just like the tares are to be gathered and to be burned. But at verse 43, to finish that, the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. And that's the application that Jesus gives. And I want you to notice what was left out of that explanation. Not that Jesus missed something and he should have included it, but that you would expect in reading the explanation, you keep waiting for it and it's just not there. There was no comment made about the reference or the proposal to gather up the tares. Without only an implication that he said that's going to be done in the end of time. But he doesn't make any parallel about that. He doesn't make any reference to that in the explanation. Nor does he make any reference to about leaving them, of the response to leave them to the harvest, except by implication that you leave them until the time of the harvest to come. But I want to talk about an abuse of the parable for a moment. What kind of abuse have been made of the parable? It is contended from this parable and in the discussion of church discipline that we should not practice church discipline because God will do the separating at the end. And so those who argue against church discipline go to this parable and they say Jesus gives an explanation of the parable that the righteous and the wicked should dwell together. And anytime we try to separate them and withdraw ourselves from those who walk disorderly, we're trying to separate the wheat from the tares. And what God tells us is to leave the wheat and the tares and let them grow together, and God will do all the separating in the end of time. That's not our job nor our place. And that's the point of the parable, they think. The answer to that is the fact that that would contradict plain New Testament passages. Let's take just a moment, though we'll look at these more thoroughly sometime later. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul addresses the church at Corinth and tells them concerning this fornicator in their midst that they were to take action upon him, and he rebuked them for not having taken action, for letting him stay there in their midst without some kind of discipline. He said, "You are puffed up," I notice at verse 2, "and have not rather mourned that he that has done this deed should be taken away from among you," that is, separated in the sense of no longer having fellowship with him. Now notice at verse 5, "Deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus." Drop down to verse 9. "I wrote to you in an epistle not to keep company with a sexually immoral person." What am I learning from that? I'm learning that 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 through 13, those few verses we notice, serve as a summary that plainly tells us that we're to withdraw from those who walk disorderly. Perhaps 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 is even clearer, verse 6, that we're to withdraw ourselves from every brother who walks disorderly. So whatever application we make of the parable of the wheat and the tares cannot contradict those plain New Testament passages. But I want us to go back to verse 38, and I had you to underline the word world, because the field is the world, it's not the church. And those who so argue this concept that this applies to church discipline have to make the church the field, or make the field the church, that we're to allow the righteous and the wicked to dwell together in the church and don't do anything about it. Don't even try to separate them. Don't try to correct that. Let them grow together until the end of time, and then God will take care of that. That contradicts plain New Testament passages, but go back again to verse 38. The field is the world. And that's the point that we're going to see here as we make some further application. But I want to drop down to verse 47 now. I've seen the parable and I've seen Jesus' explanation of that. But there is a parallel, and that is the parable of the dragnet in verses 47 through 50, a short parable. And so let's read verses 47, 48, 49, and 50. Seems to be parallel. In principle, they're not exactly the same. Their focus is a little different. We'll get to that here in just a second. Look at verse 47 beginning. This is not the same parable, but it is parallel. "The kingdom of heaven is like to a dragnet that is cast into the sea and gathered some of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but threw the bad away. So will it be in the end of the age. The angels will come forth, separate the wicked from among the just, and cast them in the furnace of fire, and there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth." Not as long as the parable of the wheat and the tares, the point is much the same. Now let's talk about the parable itself, verses 48 and 49. In verse 47, the text says, "A dragnet was cast into the sea, and it catches both good and bad." It was a net. Without reading A.T. Robertson's full quotation, he talks about the ends were stretched. This was a net where the ends were stretched and then drawn together. It was thrown out in the sea and then drawn together, and you draw everything in. So there's going to be some good things. There's going to be some good fish. There may be even things that are not even fish there, and you bring them in, and it catches all kinds. That word is only used here in the New Testament, not found anywhere else. And just as the field is the word, so the world, so the dragnet catches all the fish that are in the sea, and the separation comes afterwards. There's no separation while the net is in the sea. That's done after you drag that in. And that's the point of the parable. So let's go further in the parable. Look at verse 48. They then drag it to shore, the text says, and they sit down and they gather the good, the separation of the good from the bad, and they throw the bad away. The separation comes at the end, not while it's out in the sea. Now here's the application Jesus made of that in verse 49 and 50. He said, this is what will be done in the end of the age. So it will be in the end of the age, the angels will come forth and separate the righteous or the wicked from among the righteous. So the angels are going to come forth. They're going to separate the righteous and the wicked. That's the point. The wicked will be burned, parallel to what we saw in the parable of the tares in verse 50. And then furthermore, we see the difference now in the two parables. What are the differences in the parables? Well, let me bear with me just with another quotation or two. William Taylor said in Parable of Our Savior that both alike deal with the coexistence of good and evil within the same enclosure, and both of them look at the question of the absolute separation of the evil from the good. So they're the same so far. But the one gives prominence to the impracticability of attaining that before a certain period, while the other emphasizes the assurance that such separation will ultimately be secured. And that's the case of the parable of the dragnet. Now, what's the difference? Well, R.C. Trench, this is his parallel that he gives in his study of the parables, that he said they're much the same parable. They make the same point, but a little bit different emphasis. Where the tares focuses on the present intermixture of the good and the bad, the dragnet focuses more on the future separation of the good and the bad. They both make that point, but one focuses more than the other one does. This focuses more, the parable of the tares focuses on more the fact that men don't do the separating, whereas the parable of the dragnet focuses more on the fact that God does the separating. The same point. Whereas the tares focuses on the gradual development of the tares, where the dragnet focuses on the final consummation. They're much the same parable. They make the same point. They give different emphasis. Now let's talk about the lessons that we learn from this parable, and the lesson will be yours. What do we learn from this parable of the wheat and the tares? I learned, first of all, that there is an enemy that's sowing tares. That just as good seed is sown, the Lord, through his disciples, is disseminating the good seed. And just as that's done, the devil is going forth sowing the evil seed. There is a common thought in our society that it's all good. Anything religious, anything that's being done in religion, in the name of religion, that's being dished out, somebody's teaching something, that's good. It's all good. And what I learned from the parable of the tares and the wheat is that it is not all good. That there are those who are teaching the doctrine of the devil. There are those who are teaching something contrary to the truth, and it's not good. And so the devil is out sowing the tares. There's an enemy sowing tares. Anyone teaching anything contrary to the revealed will of God, they're sowing tares. And that's being destructive. The second thing I learned is the fact that we cannot remove all of the evil in the world. And therefore we have a need for patience. We can't remove all of the evil. That's the point of the parable. Again, I share a quotation from William Hendrickson. He said, Jesus then at once, again, going to impress upon these men that before the final judgment arrives, there will be a lengthy period of waiting during which they must exercise patience. Jesus must have been trying to instill in his disciples this concept that you need to be patient till the end of time. There's not going to be this complete separation. There's going to be evil in the world. There's going to be evil all around you. And the end of time, I'll take care of all of those deeds. Here's another lesson I learned, and that is that there will be a separation in the end. That while we may be living next to our neighbor or our friend or a coworker that is practicing evil and they're living an evil life and they're part of the tares, there's going to be a separation in the end of time. We're not going to be forever among the wicked. A fourth lesson I learned is the fact that God's long suffering does not mean that all is well. That just because God is tolerating something, and tolerating in the sense of being long-suffering, that God, we may wonder like the psalmist did this morning in our studies, how long are you going to let this go on? How long are you going to let the world stand? How long are you going to let this wickedness proceed? And God's long-suffering doesn't mean everything is well, because in the end of time, God's going to separate the righteous from the wicked. And so yes, the dragnet has been cast, and the righteous and the wicked are together. And yes, in the world, there are the righteous and the wicked together. But God's long-suffering doesn't mean that everything is all well. Another lesson we learn is that it's not the place of God's people to punish the evildoers. For example, the concept of holy wars. It's not our place to separate. That doesn't mean that we discipline or discipline our children. But as far as taking care of all the evils and settling all the scores in the world, like the concept of holy wars, that's not the place of God's people. Another lesson is the fact, notice back at the beginning, at verse 24, 25, and 26, the devil was working while men were sleeping. The devil was working while men slept. That is, sometimes the devil himself works undercover and in the night. 2 Timothy 3 talks about how evil men advance their cause, and they work undercover in the darkness of the night while men are sleeping. Jude 4 talks about he works unnoticed at times, where he's working silently and he works quietly where men are not noticing. The devil works while men sleep. And furthermore, sometimes, and finally, the difference is not readily noticeable at first. Go back to your parable beginning at verse 26. That after the tares were sown, verse 26 says, but when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared, delayed a little bit. It's not noticeable at first. So someone has sown the tares and it grows and it looks the same until the head comes forth. You don't know what it is. And now it's too late because now the roots are so intertwined. Now there's too close in proximity to one another that you can't take one without taking the other. And so those are some practical things we learn from the parable of the wheat and the tares. What have we seen? Well, we've seen the parable itself in verses 24 to 30. When Jesus said, a man went forth and he sowed good seed. There was a man who was an enemy who sowed some tares. The disciples want to know, what's the explanation of that? Jesus told them, here's some parallels. Here's what that means. The separation will take place in the end of time. We saw a parallel in the dragnet in verses 47 to 50. And then there's some very practical things we can learn from the parable of the wheat and the tares. May God help us to understand the principle of that, not make misapplication of the parable of the wheat and tares as many have done. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?